Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play. Welcome to the Fallout Lorecast, the podcast that explores the boundaries of our knowledge about the world of Fallout.
You have traveled very far and suffered a great deal to find your son. Well, your tenacity and dedication have been rewarded. It's good to finally meet you after all this time. It's me. I am Sean. I am your son.
Friends, we need to talk about Father, your child in Fallout 4, and one of the main antagonists in the game. Fallout 4 is an interesting game because, unlike some of the other Fallout games, we don't get the same sort of primary villain happening in Fallout 4. And maybe this is one of those points of contention, maybe one of those complaints that the Fallout 4 haters out there are going to say is a reason why the game isn't as good. But maybe it's also one of the reasons why the game could be argued to be one of the better Fallouts out there. Whether it's Father or Maxon with the Brotherhood, we don't really get a mustache-twirling, evil villain-type character. Each of these people have their own perspectives on the events that happen in Fallout 4. And on their world, on the wasteland, on how to solve the problems that the people have. And whereas Maxon's perspective on the world seems to be very black and white, either you are a human or you are a mutant, and if you are a mutant, then you need to die. And if you're a synth, you're not a human either, so you need to die. Father's perspective on the world is more subtle. It's more complex. And we're going to go into the details of this character and how they handle these tough decisions. To start out with, Father has a very unique upbringing. In the beginning of Fallout 4, you watch as Sean, your son, is stolen away from the hands of your spouse, who is murdered right before your eyes. And from that moment on, Sean's life takes a very strange turn. Take a moment to imagine what it must have been like to grow up in an environment where everyone you meet treats you like you're a special treasure. Like you and your DNA is the solution to the problems of the wasteland. The Institute was an organization full of highly specialized, highly intelligent people who also harbored a lot of fear about what was going on out in the wasteland. Some of them had only ever lived in the Institute, underground, and never set foot outside. The stories of the things that you don't experience, and this is a human psychology thing, are always scarier than when you actually get to experience them. If someone tells you, oh, that thing's bad, don't do it, it's going to be much more scary until you actually see it or attempt to try it yourself. The same thing happens when we come up across a dilemma, a stressful situation, or a situation that we know we're going to be going into or having to deal with. We often will think through all the what-ifs, and the what-ifs that hit us the hardest are always the worst-case scenario and the best-case scenario. How many times have you said, oh, this is going to be the best vacation ever, and it was all right? Or how many times have you said, I don't know what I would do if I had to deal with this situation, and then that situation never happens? It's an evolutionary survival kind of thing. If we can plan for the worst case scenario, and the reality is that chances are that's not going to happen, then we'll be ready for anything. That seems to be the Institute's perspective on the rest of the wasteland. Oh, there are scary creatures out there for sure. They're right. But people fight them and survive that every day. Yes, the FEV has run amok. But how much does that really affect the regular person who isn't mutating into a ghoul or a super mutant? Sure, they have to deal with death claws and other kinds of creatures that have been affected by this virus. But unless that happens, they're raising their families, they're growing food, they're going about their daily lives. Sean is raised in an environment that looks at the world above ground as a type of hell. And he himself, after being taken into the Institute's underground location, never actually sets foot in the wasteland again. So that's the first thing that's interesting about his personality. He's the kind of person who has great fears and potentially misconceptions about most of the world because he hasn't experienced it for himself. As the years go by, and as the Institute has learned to use his DNA in order to perfect the synths, he rises to a place of prominence in the Institute, eventually becoming their leader, going by the name Father. And it's not just because he's your child, and so there's irony in that. It's because he becomes the father of all the Gen 3 synths, the ones that are designed with human parts. His pure DNA was the reason why the Institute was able to make synths look and act so human. And of course, they all don't turn into little Sean's, although we do get a little Sean. They are all changed in slightly different ways. The DNA is adjusted in order to make different kinds of people, male and female. Individuals who look like they have different cultural backgrounds. There's a diversity that comes from him. And growing up in that situation, he becomes the leader of the Institute and institutes for the Institute some decisions that might seem contradictory to his xenophobic perspective on the wasteland. First of all, he welcomes individuals who have aptitudes that the Institute can use. It doesn't matter if they grew up in the wasteland and they are impure or anything like that. He doesn't care. It's about their potential. And as much as he fears what's going on the surface, he's willing to put that aside in order to bring in individuals who can further the Institute's goals. He genuinely believes that the only solution to the problems of the wasteland is a synth.
At that time, the year 2227, the Institute had made great strides in synth production. But it was never enough. Scientific curiosity and the goal of perfection drove them ever onward. What they wanted was the perfect machine. So they followed the best example thus far. The human being, walking, talking, fully articulate, capable of anything.
Capable of anything. Anything that humanity would need to survive. I'm pretty sure we talked about this way back in, I don't know, 4 years ago when I did the Institute episode. But one of the things, one of the patterns you find with human civilization since the earliest stages of human civilization is that modern society until today and including today has typically thrived off of a working class. Sometimes that working class were slaves. Think back to ancient Rome, for example, where it wasn't about a certain cultural background, the color of your skin, anything like that. If you were somebody who was born a slave or you were somebody who was captured in war, you were a slave. Now, you could gain your freedom by doing certain types of things based on their policies, but the Roman world was designed around the efforts of slaves who made progress possible and made life more comfortable for their masters. You go back to Babylonians, you go back to Assyrians, they all had either a working class and or a slave class that was underneath everybody else. Even in our own world, slavery is something that is still predominant in large sections of the world. And here in the United States, somebody who works for minimum wage and does those types of jobs has a very, very hard time ever working their way outside of debt or saving for the future or investing in anything beyond just feeding themselves and having a place to live. So what if humanity didn't need to have a servant class? What if you had intelligent machines that could do everything a human could do, and we could live off of their efforts? That's the concept of synths. They are a slave class. And of course, the dilemma comes when you have to wonder if they actually are self-aware. How human are they? Because if they aren't self-aware and they don't actually mind the work, they don't really have an opinion about their lives, then they're not that different than a toaster. But if they are, then they're very, very close to being human. And that creates a different moral dilemma. Father doesn't seem to have a problem with this. He doesn't seem to have a problem with bringing people in from the outside or the events that led to his position as leader of the Institute. He refers to the night that he was stolen away from the hands of one of his parents and they were murdered as the incident. He refers to it in a cold, kind of matter-of-fact way. He justifies the development of synths as a way to actually protect and help the wasteland, even though he's sending them out into the wasteland in order to replace individuals, in order to collect knowledge and spy on the people that are living on the surface. This is something he's doing without their knowledge, without their consent. We also find out that his relationship with you is fairly complex. Did he want to find out who his surviving parent was and what they were like, actually meet them, maybe even help them out? Yeah, he did. We find out that Vault 111 did not malfunction, and that's what caused your awakening. It was rigged. He's the one who made sure that you would wake up. He wanted to meet you, but he didn't want to meet you so much that he would send his people or his synths to protect you and bring you back to him, to the safety of the Institute. He wanted to see what would happen when you left the vault. He wanted to watch as you figured out how many years had passed, figured out what the surface looked like anymore, figured out if you could survive on your own in the wasteland. It's almost like there's more evidence that he brought you back as a sort of scientific experiment to find out what you would do, because he was curious, not so much because he wanted to meet you. And yet, after however long you spend wandering the wasteland, figuring out what's going on, and then eventually building your own teleporter with the help of course, some friends, in order to actually get to the Institute, he welcomes you in. You are somebody who spent most of your time after waking up on the surface dealing with the terrors of the wasteland, allowing yourself to get irradiated and all sorts of other things. And yet, you are welcomed in as well. He seems to be more scared of going to the surface than the people who come from the surface. And in fact, he works with some of the worst people. Kellogg, for example. Now, I did mention how he was kind of indifferent about the events that led to him being collected by the Institute and used by them. Specifically, the murder of one of his parents. Now, he's not completely indifferent because he never does forgive Kellogg for the incident. But he justifies the kind of cold reflection on the event as, well, he's had his whole life to deal with it, and he's kind of moved on. And these are the details that make Father an interesting character. I'm not pointing these out, these contradictions specifically, in order to say that he's written poorly. In fact, these very contradictions are part of what make him feel like a real person. We all carry around contradictions. Most of us are just unaware. And then there's little Synth Sean. We really need to talk about him.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hello there, old chap. Good to see another of General Atomic's finest, still eager to serve.
By this point, you've probably heard that I'm expanding the rewards on the Patreon. I am doing a playthrough of the new content in Fallout 76. I'm role-playing my character. I will be streaming this live at twitch.tv/robotsradio and then taking the recordings and putting both the audio and the video up for anyone to watch or listen to in order to engage with more stuff from me. So I hope you enjoy it. And of course, that's at patreon.com/FalloutLorecast if you want to check it out. Or you could be one of our new members who signed up in this last week, Jake B, Melissa D, and Dennis J. Welcome to the Patreon. Or you could be like Germinator, our Sentry Bot, who gets a shout out every week because he's at that Sentry Bot tier. Thank you so much, Germinator. And to all 116 of our current patrons, thanks for being here and supporting the show. I couldn't do it without you. I hope you are enjoying all the cool things that you're getting and tuning into those new episodes. Also, I've got to catch up on some of these reviews. This one comes from, I think that is Leet speak for bones. It looks like an I8ON3S in the US, who writes, Fallout fan podcast. I've been playing Bethesda games since Oblivion. I'm hyped to finally find a podcast that talks about my favorite game. Love hearing lore about the Fallout universe, and the way he presents it is top notch. Keep it up. Awesome. Thank you, Bones. This one comes from Chase the Ace 89 in Canada, who writes, great podcast. Really enjoying the podcast. Very knowledgeable and love how you go back and forth with the game, looking to get into it. And then this one from Kilted Sith in the US, who writes, discovered Fallout lore. I discovered your podcast while looking up Fallout podcasts. I work 10-hour days and I only listen to the podcast. Love the content. Join the Discord. Also, keep up the good work. A bunch of stars. Thank you so much for that. And then let's do one more. Jeff Sham in the US, who writes, my daily companion. I listen to this podcast minimum once a day, to the point where Robots has started to feel like my traveling companion through the wasteland. I love it so much, and I'm thankful to have it. It's also inspired me to run my own Fallout TTRPG set in Maine around the college I graduated from, which has been a blast. And that's awesome, Jeff. Thank you so much for everyone who supports the show. Let's go talk about Little Sean. Here we go.
If you have any questions about Nuka World, I'd be delighted to answer them.
So who in their right mind decides that they're going to design a robotic version of themselves as a child, especially when some of your top scientists are beginning to present you with information that synths, Gen 3 synths, may actually be self-aware? Can you imagine implanting on purpose a child designed to be you, who thinks they are you, who will never grow old, who will stay that age forever, and feeling like that was a good idea? Here, let me read you just the first paragraph about Sean's background, little robotic Sean, we'll call him, little synth Sean, from the falloutfandom.com wiki, because I think this sets it up very well. Sean was created at the behest of Father, the director of the Institute, and is a Gen 3 synth based on the real Sean's DNA. Sean is unable to age and will remain a child forever. Sean was created not for any major research or scientific advancement, but simply on the whim of Father. And he did get some pushback. Some of the scientists that worked with him thought this was a bad idea. Some of them thought it was a good idea. And again, This isn't contradiction that shows that this is bad writing. These are contradictions that show that this is basically what would have happened if this happened in the real world. You wouldn't have consensus from everyone. There will be people who stand up against these kinds of decisions. Now, of course, with everything that goes into any sort of story, a video game, a novel, a movie, it's all fiction. So there is a meta perspective on why this is the way it is. You could argue that it's a meta perspective on Sean himself, Father, and the psychology of an individual who was stolen from his family at a young age and raised in an environment where everyone worshipped him for the most part. And this idea that somebody like that will make weird decisions. He is not a regular kind of person. He's somebody who has a very different background from everyone else. And so decisions like creating a 10-year-old version of yourself might make sense from a meta perspective. These kinds of people are going to be out there and they're going to do weird things. But I think there's another meta perspective for why Sean exists. And that is simply the idea of what if we make this play out a certain way for the player. When you get to the Institute and you come across a synth version of your child, and you're not sure at first, is this Sean? Has it only been 10 years since he was abducted? Or is this a synth? And I think that's one of the strong suits of Fallout 4's story. Specifically, that you are never sure if someone is a synth or not. How many of you out there, like me, when you met Sean, were suspicious? And then, later on, when you met Father, you were even more suspicious. If that little version over there could be a synth, then the 60-some-year-old version over here could also be a synth. And we find out later that no, this is an actual real person. This is your actual son. They are dying from cancer. Synths don't get cancer. And if you have any other questions at all, if anyone's a synth and you kill them and you look at their parts, you can find out. And if they are unkillable, you can use console commands in order to kill them and find out that they are a synth. There are characters that we've had to do that in order to discover if they really are synths or not. And yet you play through the entire game never knowing. A fun example of this is Sturges. You meet Sturges really early on in the Minuteman questline. He works with Preston Garvey. If you bring him to your settlement, he's always hitting nails into buildings or something. The buildings never seem to look nicer, but he's a good worker. He seems like a pretty chill dude. Turns out, Sturges is a synth. You can't kill him. You can't take his parts to find out. But he is a synth all along. So the question of, was Father a synth all along, is a reasonable question, even though we come to find out that he isn't. He's simply a complex, very human and flawed character. He takes to his deathbed the belief that synths cannot be self-aware. They are not sentient. And he also brings with him his belief that he should leave you, his last surviving parent, in charge of the organization. He's one of the few characters that no matter what decision you make at the end of the game, who you go with, do you side with the railroad, do you side with the Brotherhood, do you side with the Institute, or whoever else, he dies no matter what. The Institute is either destroyed or he passes away and he leaves you in charge. And the interesting dilemma here is that you can openly tell him in conversation that you disagree with his beliefs, and yet there's part of him that still believes that you are the best person to run the organization. He leaves it to you, even though your beliefs are different. Why would a person who grew up in an environment that worshipped them, who has worked for 60 years on the development of synths in order to help humanity. Their perspective on the world is that human beings can't do it on their own. We need these machines to help carry the burden. Why would this character, who believes that there's no way that these machines are self-aware, put someone in charge of everything he worked on who disagrees with that fundamental premise? There's only one answer to that. And I think that the answer is that Father is not as cold and unfeeling as we might think he is. There's hints of this in how he never forgives Kellogg. Have you met an individual or a person who seems so sure of themselves, so solid, unwavering, and yet deep down, they're soft and they're caring? Maybe Father puts you in charge because he loves you. In his own sort of weird way, sent you across the wasteland, potentially to your death, knowing how scary it was and very particularly being afraid of everything out there, to see if you would make it to him. Maybe he needed to know that his surviving parent still cared, loved him at all, and that was enough to change his perspective, at least on humanity, and to trust that someone who cared about him might care that much about the Institute. So what do you think? Is Father a villain character? Somebody who stuck to his beliefs to the detriment of humanity and the detriment of synths that were in fact becoming sentient? Or is he a pitiable character? Somebody whose life was changed and taken from him at a very, very young age, thrown into a situation that he was never prepared for, didn't ask for, and has done the best he can, only to hand things off to you, his surviving parent? Is he complex, or is he an idiot? Which do you think? Feel free to chime in on this episode, comment on the Discord or on the Patreon, wherever you listen. I'd love to hear your perspectives on this. I'll be back next week with another episode. Who knows? Maybe I'll keep doing this close look at what these very interesting characters think and how they view the situation of the wasteland. Thanks for tuning in. Stay safe out there, and I'll see you next week. To plug into everything else we're doing, check out robotsradio.net. Reach out to me on Twitter at robots_radio. Check out the Robots Radio Rocket Club, where you can join me and a bunch of our other creators creating your podcast, starting a new podcast, or helping your current podcast grow. There's more information about that on robotsradio.net as well. And you can always talk with us and the entire community, over 2,000 people on the Robots Radio Discord. Come join us. We'd love to chat with you. See you guys next time.